welcome to the first installment of the Hammered Mushroom Hour. This is a companion podcast to Not Your Average Amigos. During these podcasts, my co-host Bob and I will be discussing a variety of topics, mostly things that are presently affecting most of us here throughout the United States and or even around the world, man. We're going to go into some rabbit holes here and there and discuss a few things and have a good time doing it. We hope you enjoy today's first installment. We're going to talk about our kids. Bob and I both have children who are teenagers and facing a variety of issues. And we want to kind of look at it through our adult lens and hopefully see, if there's a brighter future for them than maybe we feel there is right now. And we won't get too heavy. This is our first go, so enjoy. Hello, hello, hello. Today we have a special episode, hopefully one of many to come, of the Amigos. This is going to be the Hammered Mushroom Hour. I'm here with Bob.
Hey.
Hey. Bob's going to become our regular special guest who wants to sit and chat about obviously all kinds of current topics and things that are on our collective conscious.
I'm the mushroom.
You're the hammer. That's what the funny thing is. We were looking for some way of putting a label on this, and both those names are back from college days.
I never really understood how I got the name personally. I was trying to remember that the other day. Can you remember how you became Hammer?
Yeah, totally.
Can you like share it or is it without,
My kids asked me once and I had to come
clean. Okay. I'd like to hear it.
Because other guys were referring to me as Hammer and they heard this.
Right.
Either online or.
Sure, whatever. Sure.
So my daughter, inquisitive, she must have been 7 maybe. And she goes, Dad, why do they call you the Hammer?
Right.
I'm like, well, actually, Jeff Smith.
Okay.
And Bill Shealy kind of ran with it, but Jeff Smith is the one who came up with it. We were playing cups in the basement of the fraternity house and, middle of the week, killing time,
right?
Drinking beer, playing cups.
Not studying.
And anyway, so it was just slamming beers.
Right.
And Jeff and I were either, I don't know if we were doing teams, how that worked, I forget. But anyway, Jeff Smith goes, Chuck the Hammer Watkins.
Ah, so Smitty coined it, huh?
Smitty coined it. And I think he was riffing on a pro wrestler at the time. There was somebody, the Hammer or something. I didn't follow wrestling as closely as he did. And Jeff.
We should Google that.
There was a Hammer
wrestler.
And then Jeff just said, hey, man, because you're hammering. Then Bill Shealy says, I'm going to call you Hammer. So bong, Bill Shealy from back in the day would not let that rest. So now that's it.
Okay.
And that's like the steak fry.
Similar to that.
So where does mushroom come from, man?
Well,
when you told me that, I vaguely remember, but because you just don't hear that too often.
I had several nicknames, and I have to say most of them were acceptable, which was nice because I could have got really, you could be Cat Vomit, right?
Chuck, a few rhyming,
right?
Rhyming scheme to go with that one.
No, I started high school. I was Stretch.
That makes sense.
Then I was I don't know if I kind of pushed the envelope, but it was McAdoo, off the last name with the Mac.
He spelled McAdoo, the basketball player.
Yeah, Bob McAdoo.
Bob McAdoo.
Who at the time...
McAdoo?
Correct.
Yeah.
McAdoo. His son plays in the NBA now.
Okay, cool.
So I was McAdoo going into college. With the fraternity, there was a mushroom episode. I don't know if there was more than one, but I remember one distinctly. And
there was an actual mushroom
episode. There was a mushroom episode where we ate the mushrooms. I can still remember Letzi. We were at the smoke shop, and Letzi had him put on some sort of Halloween mask or something while we were having a mixer.
Was this like for fun or something there?
It was freaking me out.
Okay. Is this after the mushrooms?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
We didn't actually go to the mixer.
It was a smoke shop mixer.
Okay.
Mixer, like an impromptu kind of.
Much better.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lower, yes. It's a more mellow vibe.
We had the Earth, Wind, and Fire playing, kind of very mellow. There might have been some other partaking too before the mushrooms. Sure. I don't know. Anyway, I think it was Spy who kind of started with the mushroom thing.
Yeah. Were you sitting on a couch? Were you doing something, or were you just?
It was actually a really interesting story because we were just hanging out in the smoke shop,
okay.
And when we hung out, there was a lot of partaking going on. Usually, it was called the smoke shop for a reason, and it wasn't necessarily the fact it was over a tobacco store,
which oddly enough,
right,
it was a
right. So it was one of those nights where there was, I don't know, there was supposed to be a mixer at the house, but we didn't. Mm. We were being antisocial because that's what happens when you do as much smoking as we did.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're sitting around in the living room there, and I think we had like Steely Dan on. Steely Dan was always... That was when we always played.
Was Kevin there?
Kevin was there.
Steely Dan.
Yeah, he was always, providing the music. Spy was there. A few other guys, the usuals. And, we're just sitting around. And then all of a sudden, the doors to the living room opened. There were like two doors there.
Oh, yeah.
To the hallway where there's bright lights, and I'm sitting right like by the stereo on the floor.
Yeah.
And these doors open behind me. And in that state you're like, okay, this is very surreal. I didn't do anything panic wise, but just kinda experienced that everybody kind of flowing through like, we're gonna have a party here.
Okay.
Because we couldn't, for some reason they couldn't have it at the house. Maybe it was when we were on probation or
probably
something. So they busted through the doors. They had Craig Berger. I shouldn't implicate people by name, right? Berger. What is that noise?
That's water running.
That's water. Sweet.
Sorry to say this, folks, but this is as good as it gets. The soundproofing is not.
No, that's okay.
There's going to be some background noise during this podcast. We're sorry.
So everybody kind of files in and they're ready to have a party. Which is kind of, ruining the mood at the time.
Yeah,
but
that's why I was asking you.
And it turns out I think Spy was behind bringing everybody to the smoke shop because he wanted to have a mixer.
Sure.
But that's when the whole mushroom episode happened. That night.
That's amazing because you can pinpoint it.
Pretty sure it was that night.
But, both those episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's these things that now that look back, that was a long time ago, but to remember that so clearly.
Yes. I don't know, it just, the name stuck. Okay. After that, I think it was Spy who kind of started calling me Shroom, or then there was Mac-a-Shroom.
Now that I heard.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah. And like my, parents would come for parents' weekend, they'd be like, what's mushroom?
Well, like, kind of quiet, chilling out.
Buried in shit.
Buried in, knee-deep in shit, kept in the dark.
Kept in the dark, yeah.
And that's what I say about...
Anyway.
Yeah. All right.
Digressing off the bat.
Not at all. So what happened, the genesis of today's podcast, I think, came after a few in-between get-togethers since the last podcast Bob did, and we've been experiencing some great beer.
Yes.
Some great conversation. And some shared frustrations and concerns about the state of affairs in our own lives, meaning we have children of a certain age, we see some things that are happening in the world today that obviously concern a lot of people. We're not going to go down bummer lane right now.
No.
We're going to talk about, you know, where we see some
keep
things.
It light. Keep it light.
We want to see where, you know, we have these, you know, similar experiences as many parents do, but you see how these kids, they're you know, going to inherit what we have as far as, you know, our country and, you know, our way of life. And does that concern us a little bit? You know, where we see some things happening going forward. And I mean, we talked about, you know, some similarities, I think, with kids in sports. But I mean, ultimately, I don't know. I mean, I'm not fearful. I don't think our best days are still ahead of us, as you know, as far as a country. That's a pretty big
thing. I'm scared shitless personally.
Okay, there you go.
But my kids aren't.
But that's the
which
thing.
Is weird.
That's the same.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing, I think.
But why aren't they? Why? That's what we can't pinpoint. Are they aloof?
I think maybe.
Are they self-aware?
They, you know, we're not 16 anymore or 15 anymore. And if you go back to when we weren't really thinking things through. Every day was pretty much as far ahead as you think.
Present moment.
So they don't,
in the present.
They don't think about their lives in 10 or 20 years the same way that we think, you know, about our lives in 10 or 20 years. It's totally different.
Is that more of a function of us being at, we cross the threshold, we can't think like that anymore?
I think so. Yeah.
We're not capable of putting ourselves in that mindset. If
much
as we want.
Yeah.
I think we can.
I don't think you can go back and think the same way you did when you were 15 or 16.
Well, yeah.
Brain's different,
25.
Especially with boys.
Yeah.
You know, they're not thinking much. But, you know, I think I hear a little bit about politics from my youngest son.
Okay.
And, you know, he probably swings a little more onto the left side than the right side.
Okay.
But it's not the way that we think about it. It's more like he's not taking things very seriously, which is good. He's 16. You know, and at that age, do you want to, like,
no.
take the world that seriously? It'd be a huge bummer.
But they're so connected. And you know, I think that's part of the reason why we think they should have an awareness of this.
Sure.
But they're connected in a different way.
Yeah.
They're not connected the way we're connected.
Right.
But they think they would have access to all this, but they don't look at Google news feeds. They don't
right.
look at, you know, not watching any. They're getting news of some sorts, I guess, but they're just, you know, I guess they're probably way ahead of us in the sense that they feel this is, I would assume, is a passing phase. Maybe?
I don't know. I don't think they assume it's passing. I just think that they're going to have to deal with it, and they'll deal with it when the time comes. Like, if I went back and you put me the way I think right now, back to when I was 15 or 16, I don't think I'd be able to relate to anybody that's 15 or 16. I'd be so worried and bumming everybody out about everything. You know, I think, you know, our generation is really in it, in the thick of things. And we look like, to me, I think we've ruined a lot of things for future generations.
But do you think...
We've made a lot of things better.
Think hard about that for a second, because generational, we're Generation X.
X, yeah.
We were looking back, I'm sure, as historically, about the baby boomers.
Right.
They were the 60s.
Yes.
They were full of...
They ruined everything.
And they ruined everything, right? They were cool. They smoked and did all the stuff and crazy things happened and great music and great festivals and all the stuff. And then they got
corporate. Keep that going.
Then they got corporatized. And they
what
just
happened?
Became corporate shills. Is this... But I don't see as much of that in our generation still. I think we are fairly open-minded generationally, Generation X.
Yeah.
But do we have, here's a great question, do we have anybody we can specifically point out that's Generation X that we feel is a huge disappointment, that is driving, because, you know, the current,
right,
in the political, there's some people in the...
That's a great question.
I mean, can we, you know, we can't, well, Steve Jobs was not Generation X.
No.
Jeff Bezos, not Generation X. Mark Zuckerberg is Generation Y.
Right.
He's, I guess, essentially a millennial.
Right. I think we need to phone a friend on that one, because I don't know anybody.
Do we have someone we can sit there and say, you?
It's a great point.
You were fucked up.
Somebody right in their 50s, early 50s?
Yeah. Do we have people like that? We just don't know about them.
I don't know them.
Do you work with anybody, or have you worked in your professional life, not with any names, but anybody you can think of, you go, wow, that guy, he's just all about greed and average.
Oh, sure. I mean,
we know people like that, but are they screwing up the world?
No, no.
Right.
Only maybe with their vote, right. but you know, that depends.
So we don't, I'm just saying, yeah. Generationally, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm just trying to think, because these kids, you know, they look at, I mean, my son talks about not rappers per se, but
yeah,
musical artists, you know, some of those guys. And, you know, I said, you know, that it's not shallow, but it's also, it's not someone that, you know, it's not like Jay-Z.
Right.
And I'm like, well, these guys are moguls, you know, at least
they
think in the way of right or wrong. I mean,
they're business people.
They're business people.
You're right.
And they're not necessarily destroying the world doing it.
No.
But I just don't know, you know, I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. I mean, a lot of
great
people,
question.
I think what we did, I think what destroyed, I think Generation X, the thing is become that you said before, tribalism. I think if we're guilty of anything, we in the 50 age bracket, 40s and 50s, might be possibly a little bit more of involved in some of the tribalism. Maybe not,
sure.
not you and I directly necessarily, but I think generationally.
Yeah. I mean, we've raised kids. They're probably of our generation. They're in their late teens at the youngest, up into their 20s. I mean, yeah. I know a lot of our friends have kids who are graduated from college. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine are, you know, just starting, and yours are a little bit younger. But, I mean, it's really interesting, the difference between generations in this country.
But we don't, you don't put it this way. I'll give you a great example.
Right.
Sitting in the all places at the YMCA, at the in the sauna. I mind my business for the most part. I don't get involved. But a couple of these older guys get in there and they start going after each other. And this one old guy was obviously very adamant about what. What it came down to was a new tax law. I'm not going to go down that road, but the
right.
guy was just saying, look, I'm an accountant.
Right.
And I can tell you right now, this is not going to work out as well as you think it is. But the other guy was saying, no, he was very adamant. This guy was probably 60s, 70s. And he's like, it's our turn now. You know, it's back to
reap the benefits
of that generation. Meaning the idea that we've been overlooked, overshadowed. And now
and he was an old guy.
Yeah. That's what blew my mind. I'm like, that wasn't very open-minded. He felt like now we've got the power again. It's our turn to assert our.
Has his life been so bad? He was in the hot tub, right?
I know. This was the sauna. I don't go in the hot tub at the Y.
No, right. Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing personal. They don't
wear
the sauna.
Well, the old guys don't wear their shorts, so that's a problem.
Some of them, you know, be pretty frisky in the locker room too.
Yeah.
But I guess the point was, like, I'm like looking at the guy, I'm like, I feel like they've regained the American dream. They've regained the glory days. And I'm like,
right.
We're always evolving. We're always moving forward. I think our generation looks at it as we're pretty open-minded, I would hope.
Right. Well, I mean, our generation, I mean, we talked about this before, like the group that was in our fraternity and even people we know from college and friends we've made outside of college. I mean, really, the Generation X people, even those late baby boomers, because like, you know, my wife's a little older than me.
Really?
Yeah, a couple years. Yeah. She's the end of the baby boom. We're kind of like the...
Wow.
I think we're the beginning of the Gen X.
Something
like that.
Baby boomers ruined everything.
No, I mean, I think the people in that generation are really hardworking.
Sure. Baby boom generation.
No, the X. Gen X.
Oh, yeah.
Gen X. I mean, if you think about like what we did as a fraternity.
Yeah.
And even the Greek life in Bloomsburg when we were there, it really, we built the foundation. There was a fraternity system there, but it was not to the level that, you know, that generation brought it to.
Pinnacle of success.
Right. It really kind of established fraternities on the campus, that there's a, you know, here's an outlet for housing.
Yep.
And, you know, the different fraternities were working to better themselves through their national organizations, and we, you know, we did a lot of good things.
Yeah.
And we threw parties and made money.
Which was...
Right. Which was a business. It was run like a business.
Yes, it was.
And...
I can think of a few people that ran it.
And if you're like going back and thinking about all the guys you went to college with and what they've done in their lives, I'm like, holy shit. They're pretty successful. I'm not talking about millionaires. I'm talking about people that were able to, you know, find good careers, be successful in their careers, great family people.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty amazing. Because if you went back in college and you think, how are we going to turn out?
Well,
you might have been like, I'm not so sure we're going to be okay.
But there was always a couple outliers. And you know, were a couple guys that just fell off. You know, they just got too involved in having a good time.
Yeah.
Which I think happens. I think that's a product sometimes of a repressed childhood. I mean, parents that kept you under their thumb, and then they come to college and they're on the chain and they just can't control it. But I totally agree. And I also think just the institution where we went to school produced a lot of that. I think you had a lot of, I mean, I'm from New York originally, but I had parents that came from a generation of hard work. And I think that's true for a lot of us. We had parents of that generation, you know.
They had a work ethic.
Totally.
Right.
And they had a discipline. They had good, you know, ethically, good morals.
Yeah.
Moral fiber, if you want to call it that. But as much as we came in, we knew we played hard. We worked hard to a degree. But we all, you're right, we all got out. And for the most part, I can say that when we go to this, our annual, you know, golf outing, you can see people on the placards, you know, that are around the course. You see their names and see what kind of businesses they're in and how they're doing.
Right.
But that's you know, is that lost though? I don't know. I mean, that's.
The one thing I loved about you know, fraternity life and the guys that were in our fraternity and just, you know, even outside of that, making friends, you know, back in those days and carrying it forward was, we never really took ourselves that seriously, which was great. If you were on either side of the equation, if you and I were like polar opposites in an argument, we were not taking ourselves seriously, and we could joke about our position, you know, or we could joke about what we're, you know, where our stand is, you know, and shoot holes through our own argument.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of lost, and I think that's the bad part of what's happening in the country with tribalism is, you know, even with our own friends and family members, there's no back down from a position. It's all or nothing. And people will even say, okay, well, we're just having a healthy argument, but you're not, because you're just actually stimulating an argument, and you're, for some reason, want to just stick to your point and not see the other point. Yep. That's not an argument.
No.
That's not a discussion. That's just picking a fight.
That's right. And I'm right. For me to be right, you have to be wrong.
Right. Exactly. And then there's a lot of name calling. There's a lot of labeling.
Yeah.
And that's not good for, that's not good for society. It's not good for, you know, families and friends. You know, I think a lot of that has been stressed with what's going on today.
Well, I've had some unfortunate realities out of this, not personally, but specifically people I know tell me that they've either been or have an excommunicated, quote unquote. They've cut loose people on their social feeds.
For example.
And sometimes you have to do it if it's toxic. If it's something you're like, look, dude, I just can't look at this anymore. Right? But what I'm saying, I had a guy I know that has gotten into direct battle with family and friends to the point they don't talk to each other anymore. And I said, well, it's a forum
right.
that we haven't been ever exposed to. this idea of instant gratification through social media, for example, or a lot of things that, you know, we tend to get diarrhea of the mouth. I know I have, and I've gone off and I said, oops, better pull that back. Maybe delete that. Maybe come back and not send that yet.
Sure.
And then not have any regrets. You know, because again, like you probably, your parents are probably like mine. There was a sense of reasonableness. There was always a sense of, you know, try to be, hey, look, I can have an argument, or not an argument, I can have a discussion without you, or disagree with you without being disagreeable. In the end, we're still friends. Everything's fine.
Right.
You know, again, like you said, not take it too serious. We can't do that. Laugh at ourselves.
Right.
Because we're all the same silly idiots.
Right.
But when I hear those stories, it that scares me more. What scares me more is hearing that grown adults,
right,
who should know better, have gotten into these horrible disagreements over whatever issue. Most of it's obviously political, but just then now they're not talking.
Right.
And that's the bigger problem.
It is a big problem.
And I'd rather have my son and your son, I'm sure, they sit down and maybe they get on Xbox with each other. We don't like that idea because they're not face to face.
Right.
But if they're having fun, if they're learning how to overcome obstacles through using the technology, meaning work as a team, work at whatever, without, you know, making it into I hate you, you know, into you know, that kind of thing. I mean, they're better for it, I guess. And maybe they handle the social media differently in some respects. I don't know. Who knows? We'll wait and see. I think it's
a test. Well, they grew up with it. So, yes. And so maybe they look at it totally different than
I
we
think
do.
They do. I think.
Which.
100%.
Maybe they're better wired to deal with it.
Well, they are, because they are literally wired for
it. Right.
Like, they're literally.
Personally, I wish it would go away.
Hell yeah. Well, you know what? They'll have to figure that out on their own. Won't they?
Right.
Isn't that the only thing we can think of? You see, these guys are addicts, you know, literally addicts on like playing gaming. They have to like go to, you know, Gaming Anonymous.
Sure.
That's not too far off from the point, but we worry. I know collectively we worry about our boys. I mean, my daughter socially, she's on all kinds of stuff. And I got to tell her to slow down some days because it's like rapid fire. I'm like, no, just put it down for 5 minutes.
Right.
But the boys, it's a little different way they're wired. But you're right. I think that it's so integrated.
Right.
For them, they're not using it as a tool for divisiveness.
Right.
And I think that's what's happened. We fall into this trap of this divisiveness.
Right.
Over what? When in the end, I know that we sat down and listed our top 10 priorities in life, I'd be willing to bet you and I have at least majority in common.
Right.
And I bet you the people that you've had some battles with, we did the same exercise, right? Write down your top 10 priorities. What's most important to you? I bet you have more in common.
Right.
So those three, four things we don't have in common, let's just let that go.
There's probably not even that many.
Probably 2 out of 10.
Yeah.
That we don't agree on.
Yeah.
On average, right?
Right.
But then it becomes this entire thing where our egos get all wounded and we're, you know, now we're going, oh, you know, that this guy's against me.
Right.
He's attacking me.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I'm just not agreeing with that issue.
Right.
What happened to any of that? You know, that's the scary part. Now, who did this? I don't know. I mean, who's more guilty of it? I don't think it's necessarily the baby boom generation that can be blamed for these. And I think somewhere in between falls. It's probably somewhere between millennials and Generation X or no. I don't know.
I think it's just, you know.
Or is it
our evolution? It's happened this way with the social media access to, you know, things in a second. The way the world is now, it's come to this. We're going to have to get through it and find a way.
Well, you know what worked really, really well?
Marijuana.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? Was it Joe Rogan? The guy said that one of the guys were on who were into mushrooms.
Right.
And he said, man, if every member of Congress would just trip on mushrooms once, most of our problems would go away.
During the session.
Well, you've heard now, like, they're finding, finally, that psilocybin in particular has great positive effects with people who suffer from general anxiety disorder, who have some manic episodes with certain types. And hey, look, I'm not diagnosing anybody. I'm not telling you what to do. But clinically, it's being proven that when they do a controlled psilocybin trip, whatever you want to call it, they have 6 months of relief.
Right.
No other meds. They don't need anything. They can get off all their anti-anxiety medication, I think, from what I've heard. Not everybody, but once they have that controlled, you know, maybe it's a weekend, you go away to the clinic, and then that's twice a year. So what I'm saying is, it's not too far off from the truth when you say this about people who are so tightly wired and have agendas or have so many outside influences. You know, I think that's a mess in its own right. But, I mean, like, this guy just got stepped down. Was it the EPA chief, Pruitt? I mean, look, I'm not, again, going into that. But the point is, look, this guy was serving
what
himself.
What a douchebag.
He's a douche. He wasn't serving the country. And then even if some of that stuff was witch hunt, some, I bet you 80% of it was pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Some of it's been blown up by the media, let's be fair. But, I mean, here's this guy. And what has he done? Well, who was he serving?
Great public servant.
Nothing.
Just spending our money.
Spending our money.
Traveling around in style.
I mean, what do you have? Some special, I don't know, he had some kind of room or something? I don't know, safe room?
Yeah.
Something crazy. But, all right, so.
He's gone.
He's gone, thank God. Good riddance. Well, now there's SCOTUS, so we'll go down that.
Yes. Let's not go there.
We're going to bypass that one altogether. But back to, like, kids. I mean.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have girls.
I don't.
I have a daughter who, luckily, I think being the second child, is learned to stand up for herself and be very. I've made her very confident.
That's
good. I support
you
in everything you do. I don't, you know, accolade her to the point where it's ridiculous. But I mean, these kids. I mean, this is a huge leap coming up.
Personally,
what's going to happen?
I personally feel like women are the solution to the world.
I'm with you on this.
If you get the men out of the equation, you have solved a lot of problems. Just because we're wired, we're to be crazy.
We're
you
wired
know,
for combat.
For combat, for aggression, for
we are the hunters. They're the gatherers. And I don't want to be saying everybody's that way. That's a broad brush. But right, evolution wise.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things we were talking about was sports.
There you go.
And I don't know if we want to go there at this point, but, you know, sports, if you just look at you've seen girls' sports.
Yep. I have many times.
And I've seen way too much of boys' sports.
You should come over my way sometime.
Yeah.
My daughter plays a mean game of lacrosse.
And I just think girls get it.
They do.
Get it. It's more about the collective effort, where boys we've gone to the point with kind of the youth systems that are here in America, like AAU, which I'm not a fan of. Mm-hmm. Experiencing that through basketball.
What is it, for those who maybe don't know, AAU
is Amateur Athletic Union.
Okay, because I have not had any experience yet. My son plays ice hockey.
Right.
My daughter is playing lacrosse, softball, and field hockey, none of which are probably at that level, I don't think.
But I mean, they have
how does that work?
AAU programs for sports other than basketball, definitely.
Okay, but mostly basketball is going through AAU?
Basketball has kind of become, youth basketball has become AAU, or AAU has become youth basketball.
Okay, now
when I was playing basketball growing up, there was AAU, but it was kind of like, I don't know, equivalent to the police athletic league or something like that. There wasn't programs out there that were like AAU programs.
Okay.
You played summer leagues. You played travel teams.
Right.
So you would have your school team, right? And those kids, either it's middle school or whatever, they would play together in the summer.
Okay.
Either they'd be in a summer league playing, you know, against each other. They'd be part of the whole collective group. Or you would have a team, like once we advance into high school and stuff, we would have a team of players that played on the team or aspiring to play on the team in high school. And we would be in a summer league. Okay. Is that you?
That's
is that the beer?
Yeah.
So That doesn't exist anymore. Everything is like an AAU tournament team.
Okay.
A lot of these kids they can play for multiple teams.
Right.
So the big knock against AAU, and I would agree, is actually, it sounds like it's uber competitive.
It does the way you're describing it.
It's the opposite. Oh, it is head make it non-competitive because
everybody wins.
There's no.
I'm just kidding.
There's no, like, okay, this is a group of kids that I play with, and we are going to go and compete against another town.
Okay.
These are kids that can come from anywhere. They join this team, and they play tournament games. They might play two, three games a day. Mm-hmm. They might play for multiple teams. It's not about winning anymore.
Okay.
It's about showcasing your talent for college scouts.
I was waiting for that.
So it's
shoe to drop.
That's really what AAU is built upon in basketball, at least.
Do you agree with that?
No. It's destructive to the game.
Okay.
You can see, like, most of the AAU tournaments, the ones my son plays in, yep, there's no college scouts. I mean, there might be because his son plays.
Yeah.
But, I've seen a lot of these games, and I might have seen, like, a player or two who could possibly make a D1 school team. There's not the talent level. You know, they're in another stratosphere.
Where are they playing?
They play AAU, but it's totally different.
A different team, level of it.
Different levels. They're all sponsored by the shoe companies and that kind of thing.
That's bullshit. Excuse my French.
So, but that's fine. If they want to do that, if they're the elite and they want to do that, that's fine for me. Everybody else should go back to what used to be because it was tremendous. You know, it was really great. I used to be able to get, when I was, for summer, I would take a train. I was in high school at the time. I'd take the Paoli local into the city.
Wow.
Get off, walk over to Penn and play Sunny Hill.
Okay.
I'd get on the train. I'd take it back, get off at Narberth.
Okay.
And play summer league, night league in Narberth.
Wow.
Then I'd take the train home. There were so many places to, like, play basketball. And it was so much fun. And now it's just become this, you know, system that people have built.
Well, see, you said something there that's what concerns me playing soccer growing up. We played with intramural leagues that were part of an overall organization. Then as you tried out, you got on the travel teams. And it was great. It was fun.
Yeah.
And all the coaches, granted, were volunteer. And then a couple other, when I came up, one of my friends, his dad was just unbelievable. I mean,
right.
Had an amazing background in soccer. So, I mean, he became kind of this assistant coach, which he really should have been head. There was a little political, you know, maneuvering with that. But the point being is it was all by, you know, volunteer.
Right.
Now, if you're going to play a travel team for almost any sport, these are paid coaches.
Yeah.
When you're 10 years old, 12 years old, these are guys who are making a living and they're practicing 3 days a week. And for what? And, you know, honestly, like you said, there's the standouts. There's some people who are at that elite stratosphere, but I'm like, it's become a business and, or it's become a system or it's become something that it wasn't supposed to become. And I think I see this in a lot of things in our society nowadays, especially with the youth. And the better is, like you said, if you can say, look, there's always going to be that elite group, and that group, see you later.
I mean, right.
You know, those guys are that good. They should go up there and give it their all and see what they got. Everybody else should be out there to play to win, have fun.
Sure.
Team effort, especially in basketball. I mean, in any team sport, but, you know, basketball and lacrosse, for example, in soccer, you're always moving.
Yeah.
The ball is always moving. Something's always in motion. You're always looking for the next opening.
Yeah.
A little different than football in some respects, in baseball. But those sports, even hockey, they're always moving, moving, moving.
Sure.
And it's a team effort in the end. There's individual effort and there's team effort.
Right.
And it's a fun thing to watch when that, like you said, with women, they play as team.
Right.
Team, and there's a couple standouts.
They do.
And they play as team. They take instruction sometimes better than boys.
They do.
They work to beat, what's the word I'm looking for? Their technique is very important. So if it's better for them, they're going to listen and improve technique with some, you know. So anyway, just the difference in.
Well, I mean, they're better listeners.
They're better listeners.
To you know, just in general, I would say my experience with women, they're better listeners than men.
That's different. I mean, getting off the point a little bit, but
yeah, you know. But the you know. Really, it comes down to this, you know, my experience with, you know, watching AAU basketball is, you know, in a AAU system, you know, the kid that's dribbling down the court is thinking about how am I going to score?
Really?
Yes.
That's his only goal.
That's what he's thinking.
That has nothing to... Okay.
When he should be thinking...
I'm going to have to come out and watch this.
When he should be thinking, how am I going to get the ball to the guy that has the best opportunity to score. That is gone from the game. Yes.
That must be painful.
It's very evident. There are travel teams out there.
Yeah.
And like my son's team would run into a travel team every once in a while and they'd come out on the court and you'd be like, the wrong age group is here. We're going to kill these guys. And they would beat them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they played as a team. It's 5-1.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Wow. It,
and I'm not talking about the elite players. I'm talking about the kids, you know, that play for the fun of it.
Yeah.
They're being duped with this AAU programs that are out there. It is.
Now, is AAU, is that national?
It is.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm sure because sometimes some things are regional.
Oh, but there's no real, there's an organization.
Yeah.
But it's all kind of little pockets of teams that are all over the place and tournaments. Guys will start tournaments with, you know, they'll get four or five high school gyms in the area and they'll they'll make a tournament for a weekend.
Okay.
And just make money. You have to pay to get in. Parents have to pay to get in. You know, you're paying entry fees as a team. So it's a money making venture.
No, there in its own right again is a problem. The profiteering on some of these things at this age makes no sense whatsoever.
Right. No, it's a business for a lot of people.
Well, they've also used the college model and obviously the professional model.
Right.
Professionals. But what happens is this dilution, you know, was it, it's not college, is it? I guess it's pro sports, it has to be pro sports, yes. Well, with the sports books, because PA is getting a sport. I mean, they're now sports gambling.
Yeah.
But also because of the endorsement of like the NFL owners, I think, to some degree, because
they'll
get a cut.
Right.
I mean, I kind of understand it at that level, and you have to live with it the way it is. But there's a level where it just, you know, you got to take that out of the equation.
Yeah.
And when there becomes a for-profit mentality, look, my buddy's wife is, she's a secretary, quote unquote, but she oversees the local soccer league. Mm. That's a big soccer league. I mean, it's for our township, and it is massive. And she does a lot of work. She gets a little bit of a salary,
right?
But it's not paying major bills. But you know, it's real work. I mean, it's hard work. She really has to put a lot of effort into it. It's not an easy thing to do. I think for someone like that, sure. And I think for some things, you have to, you know, realize that there should be some compensation.
Right.
But to turn it into a profit, like I'm profiting off this, like this is going to make us money,
right?
Or I'm going to make money, or this group of people to make money off of this. It's sort of sick.
It is.
It's a sickness in our. In the Pope came out recently, of all people, and said people. He was begging the United citizens of the United States, in particular, I think, to stop and look around and realize that we, you know, how material things have become.
There's certain things you don't have to profit off of.
Right. Well, that's kind of the issue. Or how can we make money off of everything? And that comes. You watch, you know, some of these shows like Silicon Valley on, you know, the point is there's this profit center.
Right.
You and I both work for companies that obviously definitely have to make a profit. They're for-profit entities. But to what degree?
Yeah.
And And I think we've had discussions about, well, getting into any nitty gritties, but I think we both work for companies that deep down in the heart of things are good institutions, have the right idea.
Built on real values.
Integrity, values,
right.
Money's, you know, hitting goals is important, but,
sure,
you know.
Not at the expense of everything else.
Not at the expense of everything else. And there's still at least the idea of, again, the value side of things.
Yeah.
And that's been lost. And again, full circle, come all the way around again. I'm going to throw it in here, but you look at the guy that's running the country right now, and you're sitting there, and that kind of bothers you a little bit.
It bothers the hell out of me.
It's it's almost everything's for profit, or everything's about, you know, me. And I know deep down you can say that, you can shoot some holes in that. But again, that's what came back. We talked about this initially, before we started the podcast, how will that impact our kids? And we think maybe they ignore it. You know what I mean? They're not in tune with it for good reason, but they're
in tune with.
Because you said there's a lot of kids who look at this as.
I mean, I just, you know, hearing my son and his buddies and everything talk about politics, they do sometimes. And there's kids, his friends are on both sides of the equation.
Yeah, which always should be, right?
But they're not really taking it that seriously.
Yeah.
Like, and not a bad way. It comes back to, like, taking yourself seriously. They're not taking it so serious that it's going to end their friendship, that they're going to have to, like, you know, no longer be friends. They can see each other side of the discussion.
Yeah, I think that's a very important, especially because we talked about the influence of social media and technology. Obviously, there's some idealism to some degree. I mean, when you're young.
Yeah.
You know, my son says some things to me that I remember myself saying the same thing, and I looked at him, I go, I hope it works. Like, I hope your generation, I hope you guys are the guys, the men and women that will come out and make it work. Because the one thing about technology, which you can see, is there's some equalizing effects of it, where you can, if you do it the right way, you can you can put groups together, you can mobilize people, you can actually put some agendas through that, hey, look, the Me Too thing, I don't even want to go there. But to be honest with us, that has had an impact, mainly because of social media and the way it spread so quickly.
Right.
A lot of wrongs have been sort of righted to some degree. I mean, a lot of things haven't. But the swiftness of this, the momentum of that, came about because the mobilization, I think, and some of it's bullshit, I'm sorry to say. Some people have been falsely accused, and that's not good. So maybe if they use the technology in the right ways,
right,
and continue to use that, you know, responsibly, and don't let it corrupt.
I
think we have hope.
I don't think they're thinking about that.
I don't think they are. No. I don't think that's me thinking. My 50-year-old mind trying to get my 15-year-old mind.
Right.
I don't think they are either. But it's a good thing.
I mean, I have hope.
I do.
For the next generations. They've been dealt a pretty shitty hand. But I think that, what I see in kids is they're positive. They have a good outlook on life. They're looking ahead, that they're going to have families and be responsible citizens. So
do you see more fearlessness in them? The reason why I'm saying this, like, all things,
I guess,
are
possible. So
all things are possible,
but I think that's just, you know,
at
being
age,
young.
Yes.
Yeah.
I forget that sometimes,
right.
And I have to catch myself.
Right.
Idealism or that idea of I can't fail, but I'm like, and I tell my kids, I go, look, you can have a place to stay as long as you're moving forward.
Sure.
If we have to be, you know,
right,
making you breakfast when
right
25 or 30, even, I don't want that. But my point is, if you're moving forward, if
right
you have a plan of action and you're failing, you're growing.
We'll support you. Yeah.
I'll support you. Fail,
right,
grow, fail,
right,
grow,
right,
fail, grow, until hopefully, ta-da, something kind of starts to catch.
Sure.
You know, so, I mean, every parent wants the best for their kids.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're in this really precarious situation because we've never, I mean, every generation faces it, but we have all these, you know, there's all these issues arising, but we have to, we're dealing with this whole new set of variables being technology that we've never dealt with before. And
hey,
human beings aren't very good at it. We're pretty bad at this.
Here, I'm going to make a political statement.
Go.
On technology. So the thing that blows my mind is, you know, why would you dispute science if you are truly a capitalist?
Okay.
I'm just gonna leave it there.
Okay.
Because I'm very much a capitalist.
Sure. I think most of us are.
Yeah. I mean, it's a foundation of America. It's why we're successful.
But you said something once before, and it actually took. We both said this, having the social responsibility element tied to capitalism.
Sure. Yeah.
Can I be a social responsible capitalist?
I'm not saying I'm greedy.
No,
right?
No.
Greed is you know kind of a offspring or comes from capitalism, I guess.
Can, for sure.
You don't have to be greedy, but disputing science blows my mind because there are so many opportunities within science. So if, like climate change, if the vast majority of legitimate scientists are saying that there is climate change and there are going to be repercussions from climate change.
Sure.
That's an opportunity.
Isn't it?
It is.
Isn't
all,
it?
All things that are change are an opportunity.
Would you think of any human being in the United... Well, any... Okay, would you think anybody... You just talked about this.
Right.
You mentioned your mom had a reaction, and I had the same problem, the penicillin. She inadvertently got some, and it's not doing her well. But without penicillin, I don't think you and I would be sitting here right now.
Right.
Or our children be alive.
Sure.
So I know there's anti-vax, and we're not going to go there, but my point is those who deny this, science...
Sure.
...are alive today because of it.
Right.
And... if there's an opportunity to this on the season of global warming, I mean, I can't use that. It's not politically correct not to say climate change, but it's climate change and human beings are impacting climate change. Let's just leave it at that, all right?
Yes.
But we have a terrible grid. We have terrible infrastructure.
Yes,
those things are true. And we are vulnerable to some things that could really honestly cause some serious harm. These solar flares, it sounds like, truly, honestly, a true coronal mass ejection comes out of the sun and it's massive. It would fry every electronic on that side of the planet, I mean, pretty much throughout the entire planet. But can we find a way to blunt that? Or can we improve our grid? Is that a whole new technology?
That's what humans do.
That's what we do. We innovate. And we,
that's what we do. That's why we're here.
Far,
exactly.
Can we find new ways of doing this and improve?
Why not embrace it?
And it's a whole new industry.
Right. Exactly.
And we've got a whole new way of you know, look, machines probably do a lot of the work, but
it's still an industry that creates jobs and helps the economy.
Creates jobs.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. You know, we know Harley right now is up in the tizzy with a certain reason. You know, they might be leaving the United States and some of their operations. That's not looking too well for administration, but you know, the cost of doing business has to be, you know, reflected in reasonable to a point where people can. But if you're creating new industry, aren't we always doing that? Aren't we always reinventing? We're creating new things all the time.
Right.
I don't want to go back. I mean, some ways I do, but I don't think any one of us would go back to having muddy roads with horse-drawn carriages.
Right.
I don't think anybody would want that.
No.
Do I think that some ways we are approaching technology are good? I don't know. We're still learning.
I would.
We're connected. But we're not as.
Right.
We don't know our neighbors as well.
I would not mind if I didn't have to pay for gasoline to put in my car.
Yeah.
I would not mind that.
I mean, that
I would prefer to pay the electricity to charge my car.
If the electricity was sustainable.
Because I have solar panels on my roof.
Elon Musk.
That just makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, we're going to have to. We're going to have to some degree because, you know, no matter how we've cut it.
And that's not going to happen overnight. It's not like the petroleum industry is going to go away overnight, but it needs to change.
Where's that clean coal at?
It needs to change. And the coal industry needs to change too. If they can do it in a clean way, in a responsible way, then there's a place for them.
So let's use this as a great example. One of the countries in the Middle East, one of the largest oil producers, Saudi Arabia.
I've heard of them.
Okay. There was a piece on 60 Minutes a few years back, and they're developing wind technology because they're in the desert.
Right.
The wind blows all the time.
Renewable resources.
Well, they know that their reserves of oil in Saudi Arabia is finite, at least for now. There's new drilling techniques and all this other kind of stuff. Let's just say that they realize the future. They want to be an energy producer. They want to continue to be an energy producer. And with these wind farms, you can sell the energy out. So, I mean, you know, there's been some talk of this here in the United States with T. Boone Pickens and these guys who want to create these huge wind farms. And who knows which way we'll go with that. When you see countries like Saudi Arabia, they're only here because of oil.
Right.
If they see the future and they're looking around the curve and they're saying, hey, look, we got to be ready and start transitioning.
Right.
And I know like you said, it's a slow and it can be a painful process. But I think
I don't know why we're fighting it though. This country's fighting that, whereas other countries are embracing it, including countries like China.
Well, China has no choice because China is limited on their resources. They have to import. What they do is they have to use. I think their energy, the largest abundant energy source, is coal.
But we've had to import, oil.
Right. Exactly.
I don't know if that's the driving factor. I think more so that they see it's an opportunity.
It's a huge opportunity because they play the long game.
Exactly.
China is not looking at chess.
Right.
I'm sorry, checkers. They're looking at chess.
Right.
And the Chinese leaders know it. They are going to wait and wait. They're going to wait us out.
Right.
And that's a problem. That's kind of an issue a little bit with, politically speaking, but our administration, we just have people that... some people are not thinking about the long game.
No.
And the long game is our grandchildren and possibly their children.
We're
going to be long gone. Who knows? Maybe not. But we're probably going to be long gone at that point. We have to keep looking at ways of reinventing and creating opportunities. And I don't want to take anything away. I've got a lot of family in West Virginia, by the way. One of my cousins was for a long time in the energy industry, more on the oil side. So I was down there visiting them a few years ago for my uncle's 90th birthday. Hadn't been down there in a while. So we're in Clarksburg. Pull into the Hampton Inn, that's where we're staying, meeting up with some other family members. And in the parking lot were like 50 white pickups. I thought it was like some kind of weird like commune deal. Or
anything. Right.
David Koresh is going to come back from the dead. No, and they're all Texas license plates. So I go to my cousin Scott at the party. I guess Scott, he was in the energy industry. I go, hey, what's going on with these Texas? They were there in West Virginia for fracking.
Oh, okay.
Not coal.
Right.
Not oil, but fracking.
Hmm.
I said, how does that go over with the coal people? Because we're going to save all the coal jobs. And he gets it. He totally gets it. He totally understands. Sometimes things are abrupt, and that gets people up in a tizzy. But the idea that we're going to return to coal...
Now, the coal industry's dead, pretty much.
We have to really start to wrap our heads around that fact.
Right.
And it's time to, again, if you could say, look, I'm going to find a way to retrain these folks.
Yeah.
I'm going to offer these programs, and we're going to do this right here because we can.
Right.
I mean, it's easier, again, said than done. But it boggles my mind.
Right.
That we're, better yet, how many times recently, and this is a new phenomenon, it's not new, but it's become a resurgent phenomena, about flat earthers. You talked about science.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Yeah.
And anybody who can reasonably tell me that if you keep flying in one direction, you're going to hit a wall?
Right. Go over the edge.
Or go over the edge. And say that with a straight face. Some of these people actually are intelligent, believe it or not. They have some backgrounds, and you're like, it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. How could people be denying.
Right.
And where does that come from? That's a whole other podcast.
It's the same people that think Paul McCartney's dead.
Right. Every other week. Right. Yeah. So I mean, I think with like my son in particular, you know, science is definitely alive and well.
Yeah.
They always look at all the possibilities. I mean, they look up to guys, you know, these icons like an Elon Musk, for example.
Sure.
He's an easy one to pick out of the crowd. But I mean, love or hate, or you don't feel that this is really ever going to turn out the way he says, at least it's forward thinking.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when we were growing up, the word innovation didn't exist in our vocabulary, and now it's out there every day, yeah. Which is, you know, really exciting and hopeful that we can innovate and science can lead us forward and solve a lot of problems.
Yeah.
So let's embrace science and not dispute it and not say, you know, we don't believe it.
Can't say that because you feel like we were talking earlier about this particular woman who says, I don't believe in climate change.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, okay, you can say you don't believe in God.
Right.
Because that's a belief.
Right.
You have to have a belief system. But when, like you said, if we say 90%, use that as a number, of climate scientists globally say, look, climate's changing. That's going to happen. We know this is going to happen.
Climate. I believe it's closer to 99%.
Okay, so 99% are saying this. And guys with PhDs, some of them go from the Jet Propulsion Laboratories.
Many of them work for this organization called NASA.
Oh, that company.
Yeah.
I mean, that organization.
Right.
But yeah, why would astrophysicists?
Why would they make shit up?
Here's the funny thing. My oddly enough, my wife's one cousin has a PhD in astrophysics.
Mm-hmm.
Ta-da. Okay. But Carl, nicest guy on the planet, down to earth. I mean, just, right. You know, salt of the earth. I've asked him that same question recently. Saw him a few years ago, and I said, "Hey, what about these deniers?"
Mm-hmm.
He says, "No, it's real. It's happening."
Sure.
He goes, "I'm not going to stand on top of a tree and scream it," but he goes, "It's we have to be aware of it."
We have to
sit here and say, "Look, this is not, you know, there's a lot of things in the, politically, maybe again, or maybe motivationally,
right?
There's maybe a profit motive and other things, and some people do profit back, you know, both sides." But he says, no, it's absolutely 100% happening, okay? And goes, it's absolutely 100%. And this is just one person, one of the, hopefully the 99%, saying, look, yeah, man is impacting it.
Yep.
And we're accelerating it. So can we find a way to slow it? Doesn't mean that it won't happen.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, these are much bigger.
I mean, issues. I hope there is a way to slow it, but I'm more...
We just learn to adapt.
How do we deal with it? There's the opportunities.
Well, you know, global, the warming side is bad.
Sure.
In a lot of ways, the ice age is worse.
Yeah.
If we ever suddenly or move, when you move into an ice age, which usually happens after the warming part.
Right.
That's where things get really interesting.
Right.
Because, you know, as much as it's difficult to move people inland,
mm-hmm.
but if they're not freezing to death.
Right.
In the process, and all the crops stop growing altogether, and there's nothing else.
You're cheering me up, man.
I totally ripped that off from another podcast.
Yeah.
But, you know, that makes sense. And we're not going to see that ice age anytime soon. But
the key is, Chuck, opportunity.
Opportunity.
There's opportunities with change. So embrace the opportunities. Embrace the science.
And with that, we just hit the first hour.
Excellent.
Of Hammered Mushroom.
I love this beer, too.
In a shout-out, you know, I don't know if I can do this. I guess I can. I guess they won't be upset.
It's the Transcendental Oat IPA brewed with honey.
This is Pineal. And a shout-out to our, I would have to say, friends, because we're spending many afternoons and evenings at Tired Hands in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. But today, Bob and I enjoy, I think we'll make this part of our routine. Well, today we've enjoyed Pineal, as Bob said.
Yeah.
Transcendental Oat IPA brewed with honey. And on that note, dude, thank you.
Thank you.
Peace out.